This is Ashley Bond, Miss Illinois USA 2009 and a member of the Chicago Lovables. And you're listening to Fred and Mark on the Chicago Bullseye.
What's going on? This is Joakim Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
I'm not here around this week. Now you may be, but I'm not.
You hungry?
Hey, Ma! Bring us some meatloaf!
You don't think this is the greatest? I will fight you. That's no lie.
Can you clap for the killers?
All right, let's rock.
Give it up for them gangsters.
Throw them off that.
One time for the killers.
Whoa.
Double up for them gangsters.
Just living the dream.
I have been waiting to get one of the Chicago Bulls.
I gotta be honest. I come in like a little
Logan, everybody, welcome to another exciting episode of Chicago Bullseye. And this episode is really kind of a three-parter. In the first part of part one, you're going to hear a call that I made to the score while driving in to work. It was on the Mully and Handley show, and it was just an endless stream of anti-Fred Hoiberg, anti-management rants from callers and the hosts. And I finally had enough. This actually occurred on the 29th, just after they beat Toronto. It was the morning after they had beat Toronto. And again, I think at that point, the record against top 10 teams was 9-3, or it might have been that after the Indiana game. After their record against the top 5 teams in the East and the top 5 teams in the West, I believe, is 9-3. Against the top 4 teams in the NBA, they beat the Spurs, they beat the Cavs, they beat Oklahoma City twice, they lost to Golden State. So, you know, they're 4-1, and yet there's a general consensus across the fan base and among most people I talk to, that the sky's falling, this team is terrible, they should blow it up, you know, we're done. I just want everyone to take a step back and ask yourselves, what players on this team have played up to their capabilities so far at this point in the season? What players in this team have played what we should just expect from them, just average? Has Nico Mirotic approach what we should expect from him? Absolutely not. He's been a horror of epic proportions. He's been terrible so far this season. I think he's played below expectations. Derrick Rose clearly has. Noah, I think, has for the most part. The only guy in this team I think has probably lived up to the expectations of what we should expect has been Jimmy Butler. Maybe Gasol to a lesser extent. But overall, there's a lot of room for improvement. Yet, if you take a step back and you look at the team, we're really not in a terrible place. Our record is pretty good. We're right there with the capabilities of easily grabbing the 2 seed. And, you know, let's see how this team looks in April and May, when they finally had a chance to have 3 or 4 months in the Fred offense, finally had a chance to figure some things out. Maybe we got Dunleavy back. You know, another thing that people act like didn't happen, we were 9-10 last year without Dunleavy, 5 double-digit losses, 1 20-point home loss at home against Utah. And I guess everybody act like that didn't happen, you know, with the greatest coach in regular season history. So take a deep breath, consider where we're at, and ask yourself, don't a lot of these guys have a lot of room to improve just to get to where we should expect them to be? And if that happens, how will this team look then? That's the question. All right, so part one, my call to the score. Part two is an episode that Mark and I recorded. It was actually recorded the day after the loss to the Knicks, and we pretty much just talk exclusively about Jimmy Butler's comments. So you'll get Mark's thoughts and insights on Jimmy's comments. Love to hear your comments. Follow me at CBE Fred. You can also shoot me an email or shoot us an email at ChicagoBullseye@gmail.com and direct that to myself, Mark, or Tim, and any questions you want to hear spring up on the next upcoming show. So appreciate it. I've had a lot going on, so I appreciate you guys still listening, even though the episodes aren't coming with regularity. 2016, we're going to definitely make a greater effort to give you guys more episodes and a more professional sounding show. So I hope all is well. Happy New Year to you in 2016 and all to your family. All the best and go Bulls.
Thank you very much, Jordan. Let's get back to the phone lines. We got a lot of people want to check in on the Bulls. We'll start with Fred. Fred is on the road. Hey, Fred.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
We're doing well.
I want to defend Fred Hoiberg a little bit. You know, it's kind of funny. There's a ton of the fan base. It's like Tibbs apologists and Tibbs lovers. So they jump on everything that management does or Fred does. But if you take a look at the big picture this year compared to last year where the team was, I think last night, I believe, was their 10th win against a team with 500 or better. They're 4-1 against the top four teams in the NBA with their only loss to the Warriors. Two wins over the Thunder, went over the Cavs, went over the Spurs. The schedule so far this year has been much harder than it was last year, and the East is much better than it was last year. The tenth place team in the East this year is over 500. You have 52 games against the East, and there's no doubt the East is better, yet all I hear is how much worse the Bulls are this season. The fact is that Nico Mirotic has not played well. Most of the guys in this team, with the exception of probably Jimmy, have played less than what we should expect from them. We're 17-11, or whatever the record is right now, and we still act like the sky's falling. I still feel this team has a long way to go to improve. And overall, big picture, the guy's done a pretty good job. The last time I looked last year, you know, the Bulls without Dunleavy were 9-10. During that stretch, they had five double-digit losses, including a 20-point loss at home. And yet, without Dunleavy, how have we done this year? It's just unbelievable how, you know, people can't step back and look at the big picture.
I got to be honest with you, Fred. Of all the things I've heard, it's without Dunleavy, where are they at, right?
I mean, think about that.
Think about what you're saying there.
Well, yeah, well, Dunleavy is very important because he brings the outside shooting that the team sorely lacks. That's why he's important. He's an extremely important role player.
Yeah, role player is the key word there. You know, the key term. Here's Fred. You know, you got a new coach. You brought him in here, and his first move was to start Nico
over
ahead of Joakim, and that was a disaster.
Because Noah can't hit a shot outside of him.
I know, but the idea that he can't play with that Joakim can't play with Powell, I think is a false. Neither can Nico. Nico can't play. Nico is taking these step back jumpers, and I mean he's been a mess.
Guys, when Butler and Rose are your two best players, you need someone to stretch the floor.
Sure you do.
You have two big men under the basket standing there waiting for them.
Listen, Fred, when Derek pushes the ball, then the Nico, even Powell is a lot better. But certainly, you know, McBuckets is a lot better. I mean, it comes down to whether or not he'll push the ball or whether he can't push the ball or whether he thinks he's pushing the ball when he doesn't push the ball.
But Fred, you're right. The East is better. You're 1-10. You've got four games separating first to 10.
Thanks, Fred.
And you're bunched in there. It's 2.5 games back, but it's still 17-12. And the eye test some nights, and then the soap opera aspect of this thing. It's not been the smoothest 17-12 that you're painting either.
And you know, I mean, listen, we got to talk about Derek and Jimmy in that relationship, and are they getting better? And is Derek getting better? He's definitely played better, but what does that mean?
What is the end game? As you get into the playoffs, okay, 82 games in, you're 29 in. What's this going to look like? If they stand pat, if they find out they get nothing for Joakim or not much for Powell, and you hold serve with this roster, what can this team do in the playoffs?
Hello, Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of the Chicago Bullseye. I am your host, Mark Lewis. With me, as always, is the doctor, Frederick Pfeiffer. How are you, big guy?
Mark, living the dream. Holiday week. Can't wait for the joy of Christmas and the joy of the new year. Looking forward to celebrating that with the family and friends. I know you, too, I'm sure. Happy Hanukkah to you, my friend, and also a Happy New Year. But as we finally get together, it seems like it's been forever. I mean, wow, lot to talk about, right? I mean, I don't know how you feel, but this is the drama I don't really think we need, but, you know, might as well get into it. What do you think of what Jimmy said?
I'm surprised by it. I mean, that was a big call-out, I would say. I mean, have you ever seen a coach get called out like that? That was quite a call-out.
Oh, sure.
I mean, maybe you've seen them a little bit. I mean, you know, I don't know. I was surprising. I didn't expect that from Jimmy. I think it shows a whole new take on his role and what he views his role with the team to be. I don't personally agree with going out to the media and you know, and stating your opinions through the media. I think that it leads I mean, just look at it, man. It's all over. I mean, the minute he said that, it was the biggest story in the NBA. And it's just like, you know, people thrive on that kind of BS, and I just don't think that, you know, is that the type of attention, especially after a season like last year where you had all that negative attention from the coach and what he was doing, you really want to do that again this year and create tension again between the players and the coach. I don't really see the point in it, but, you know, if that's how he feels, I mean, I get the fact that he wants to be the leader. I get the fact that he wants to bring these things, make these things, bring them out to the forefront, but I just don't know if it was the right forum. But I guess we'll see how they respond. You know, I mean, they play tonight, so I think we'll see. Well, they play a crappy team tonight, but I guess we'll see how they respond to that challenge by Jimmy and the challenge to Fred. What do you think?
I think people are missing a little bit bigger picture here. Everything's focusing on Fred, which is expected when you got, you know, half the fan base being, you know, Thibodeau apologists who just are looking for anything to jump on. And of course, you know, any criticism of Fred, you know, seems to justify their pathetic notion that, you know, Tibbs should still be here. He shouldn't be here. I can guarantee you that the vast majority of players in that locker room thank God every day he's no longer here. And the team isn't better or worse with him here. I think it's a player's league. I've always maintained that. I think coaches do have some effect on winning and losing. And I'm not trying to argue that Tibbs wasn't a good coach, but, you know, the nonsense of the way he played guys into the ground, all the nonsense with Noah basically ruining that guy, he never saw any of those guys defend him last year, and there was a reason for it. Jimmy obviously was the closest to Tibbs out of anybody on the team. He met with him very publicly in the off season. He always liked him. I think the issue, though, is a little bit bigger, especially when you look at the timing of everything that happened. I think it has to do with Rowe. So if you take a step back and look out a week ago, we had an article in the AP, Fred Hoiberg wants Derrick Rose to get the ball up court in 3 seconds, just basically about push, 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 and Derrick's not getting the message. That was on the 11th, I believe, or just a week or so ago. They go to the Detroit game. Rose gets a pull-up jumper, on Jackson to hopefully send the game in overtime. He gets the call for the last shot. He doesn't make it. Goes into 4 overtimes. Bulls lose. You know, probably some frustration there to some degree, I'm sure, that didn't work out. And then the next night, they go to the Knicks, and Rose has a terrible game. What I think a lot of people didn't see in the entire game is, or paid attention to, is Rose's line, which was, let me try to pull it up here. What did he do in it? I'll get it in the interim, but he was 3-for-10 shooting, 1 free throw attempt, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, no pace in, you know, basically 21 minutes or so. After the game, he's calling out his coach, quote-unquote calling out his coach. But let's look a little bit closer at what the quote said. And I think, you got it in front of you?
No.
Here's a quote. We weren't doing what we were supposed to be doing, what we wrote up on the board before the game. We weren't doing what we were supposed to be doing, what we wrote up on that board after the game. When guys aren't doing what they're supposed to, you gotta get on guys. I'm just selecting a few sentences out of a long quote. Who's he referring to there, Mark? Who do you think he's talking about? In a game where Noah just scored, 21 points, probably had arguably the best game of the year, Taj was 3 or 4 shooting, you know, Gasol didn't play. So who's he talking about in the big
Tony
4 or 5?
So maybe the game plan was all written up for Tony at the end of the game, and they wanted to talk about him.
Well, Tony shot.
I thought the same
50%.
Thing. Obviously, I was going through each player. It's like, obviously, he wasn't saying these things about Tony Snell. He wasn't saying these things about, you know, Nico. He was saying, I mean, it seems to me like, who else on the team would have the power?
Well, Nico was terrible.
Totally deviate. He was terrible, but he's coming off the bench. Who would have the power to deviate from the game plan like Rose? Nobody.
Yeah, that's my point. Is I think bigger picture, if you really look at the quote, he's talking about the coach not getting on guys who aren't doing what they're supposed to. The issue at the heart of it is not with Fred. It's that there's guys on this team who aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. And to me, it's clear. You know, if you watched the Pistons game, you saw him not yelling, but in a heated conversation with Rose. In one of those 4 overtimes, I still remember that image. I don't think these guys are getting along. I really don't, and I think he had a major problem with his effort against the Knicks. You know, now all of us, big picture, you know, Rose played a lot of minutes the night before, and although he did take a ton of shots, he scored a lot of points. You know, I don't have as much of an issue, but it is apparent to me that he's pacing himself. He's not giving it 100%. He's kind of, you know, giving it more like an 80%. And big picture, maybe that's the right thing to do. But I think Jimmy despises this whole type of attitude that Rose has. And, you know, he's given everything every game. And, I don't see how anybody could say that Rose is. You know, he always seems to me to be playing at about 80%. Not always. Sometimes he's doing great. I've been on Rose's side and for the most part for the last 5 years. I still think he's a great kid. I still think he's, you know, for 7 years, I still think he's, you know, a good kid and got a good heart. But I do, this year especially, sense him really kind of measuring himself and not maybe giving it his all in every game. Am I wrong in that assertion?
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. Which game was the Memphis game? Well, he came out in that Memphis game, and this, because remember, he played terrible, but against Philadelphia, where he only took like one shot the first half, I think, was against Philadelphia. So that Memphis game, he comes out like a bat out of hell. He had 10 points in like 2 minutes. And then all of a sudden, the whole game, he only had 19 points in the whole game, but he had 10 points. He did it like effortlessly in the first few minutes of that game. So I don't understand how you can go from being able to control like that to all of it to only having 19 points in that one game. But it seems to me, yeah, like there are moments where he can just pick and choose and be great, and then there's moments where he doesn't look like he is great. Now, it's tough against Detroit. You know, maybe he broke assignments against Detroit. I did feel like in those overtimes he kept doing the same thing over and over and over and over again. And I'm like, was this the play call? Was it this play call for him to take a guy off the dribble and put up a floater near the free throw line? Over and over and over and over again. And I mean, the New York game he did too. He came out and he keeps trying to do that fake floater over and over again. Like it's the exact same play constantly. And I'm like, either Fred Hoiberg does not write good offenses or Derek's just doing this on his own and he's trying to take these guys constantly off the dribble. I mean, it was clear that in that overtime game that we wouldn't have won if it wasn't for Jimmy. And I mean, it does seem like the ball kind of stops with D. Rose and that it doesn't really make its way around. So, Could that be what Jimmy's going after here? It would make sense for it to be.
I think the people are making the same case about Jimmy. Like, all right, so like, there's a quote from McDermott about a week or so ago that I thought was very enlightening, and it said, quote unquote, "It's a lot more loose this year on offense. I think that's a good thing for all of us, not just for me. These guys were with Tibbs for 5-6 years, so it's a little different for them. I feel like I can get in the offense a little more easy just because we weren't around it as long." But referring, you know, kind of around what as long, around as Tibbs' offense for long. But some of these other guys may be having a harder time just because they're used to something for so long, which is referring to Tibbs' more structured offense. And Casey Johnson had an interesting article today, you know, talking a little bit about Jimmy and how it's not just Derek, but, you know, Jimmy's having, you know, a few, I guess, issues with the offense, you know, not completely used to it. I don't know, man, about Hoiberg. Here's his quote today on Hoiberg for Butler. "I was never calling out my coach. I think he's a hell of a coach. I think he's done great through these 25 games," end quote. So, you know, what is he saying? You know, I think most people would say he's still calling out his coach, and I agree. I don't think it's good for him to say he should be hammering people. I mean, maybe that's all Jimmy knows in the NBA is he's seen how Tibbs is. That's not how you act as a professional, necessarily. You know, it's, most coaches aren't like that, I don't believe. You know, treating it like a college game, and in the long term, guys are going to turn on that. You know, they're professionals. They should be up for these games. They should be able to handle this without acting like they're being talked to like it's a high school. You know, so, yeah, I guess big picture, if you read this article today from KC, some reservations about how, you know, Butler is taking to his new leadership role. Do you have any concerns about that? That Jimmy all of a sudden is, you know, really grabbing the quote-unquote leadership role by the throat and doing some things that may or may not be in the best interest of the team?
Could be. I mean, we don't know what's going on behind closed doors. It's difficult to see. But do you see him coming out and constantly, you know, he's kind of the voice of the team now for sure. I mean, you didn't really hear anything from D. Rose after that Pistons game. I mean, they went to Jimmy and said, how does it feel to have a career high? And he goes, it sucks. We lost. And, I mean, not that that has anything to do with leadership, but he's the more vocal one for sure. And, I mean, you know, comes back to this, seeing him the next day. Look, I don't agree with going out and calling out your coach and your team in front of the media. I just, unless you've tried other methods and it didn't work. Because he also seemed to, in it, I mean, it seemed kind of gracefulish. Because I mean, in the quote, originally, it was something along the lines of, you know, we need to speak up more. And it's like, I know I have, but maybe I should try harder. It's kind of like saying, I've done my part, so it's all your problem, in my opinion. Because it's like, you're not really saying, I know I've done it, but
well,
I should try
no,
harder.
No, exactly.
You're saying, I'm doing it, why aren't you?
The thing that got me is that he's got to come down on guys harder, myself included. Not really. You didn't really mean that. You're just covering your ass by saying myself included. You know what I mean? I really felt that way. I thought it was kind of a way to really describe, to really kind of disguising. If you really felt that he needed to come down harder on you, I really kind of felt like he purposely just added that to say, to kind of muddy the waters when his true intention in the message was to say, hey, coach has to come down on Derek because Derek isn't doing what he's being told. He's running his own thing, and this is BS. Something to that effect, you know. And I'm the leader of this team, and I shouldn't be the guy that always have to say it. It should be also come from the coach who seems to be siding with Derek too much, or giving him the last shot. It just, you know, and also there's the added frustration of just getting your ass kicked by the Knicks that I'm sure had something to do with it too. But, you know, if you read this KC article, I think it's good enough. Do you want me to run through it really quick? You know, some of
yeah,
it or some
sure.
of the highlights. This is from Casey Johnson today, December 20th, 2015. Jimmy Butler and Fred Hoiberg met Sunday and had what one person described as a good talk. That they conversed at all says a lot about both men. For Butler, it meant he went to the Bulls practice facility on an off day after playing 89 minutes in back-to-back games. For Hoiberg, it meant he continued the theme of communication he has cited as critical to building trustful relationships with players, a process started in the offseason when he traveled to visit all players. Debating whether Butler calling out Hoiberg fits with his publicly stated goal to be a more vocal leader, as an aside, it's more harmful than helpful, misses larger issues. Namely, how is Hoiberg going to handle the issue in the team context, and will management make any changes to a roster that is exhibiting some of the same signs of inconsistency and energy issues as last season? And it goes on, Butler's in the first year of a $92 million deal. What does it say here? Butler claimed that Hoiberg needs to coach a lot harder and has to hold everyone accountable, contrasts sharply with Derrick Rose saying he never questions the coach after getting benched for Kirk Heinrich. Look at Casey there. Let's read that one more time. Butler's claim that Hoiberg needs to, quote-unquote, coach a lot harder and, quote-unquote, has to hold everyone accountable, contrasts sharply with Derrick Rose saying he never questions the coach after getting benched for Kirk Heinrich. What's Casey saying there? That's the way to handle it, how Derek handled it. And, you know, what he just pointed out something where he gave some consequences. In the same sentence, he highlighted consequences for Derek Rose not following orders or whatever, or getting benched for poor play for Kirk Heinrich. You know, I thought that was kind of interesting in this article. Really good article. Highly recommend you go check it out. But here's another one that I caught. Furthermore, according to sources, Butler used profanity while addressing the coaching staff once and disrupted a film session on another occasion with critical comments. While those defending Butler say such instances stem from his frustration that few players match his work ethic, his habit of warming up on his own has alienated others to the point that Joakim Noah recently talked to Butler, a source said. Pretty interesting, I thought.
I buy it. I mean, it seems, I mean, look, not everybody is, first of all, you know, everyone has different personalities on a team, and you have to know how to relate to every type of personality if you want to be a good teammate. I mean, not everyone's going to have that work ethic you have. I mean, not everyone's going to be the type of player that can be drafted last in the first round of the draft and be able to become an all-star and somebody that gets a max deal and considered one of the top three, two guards in the league. Not everybody has that work ethic, and that's something that you have to understand. And can I see these comments alienating him from the team? Absolutely. I mean, they're very harsh comments. So,
especially what happens if you're one of those guys in the locker room? You know, I mean, I just got, I really, what happens if you're Derrick Rose? You know, he's calling out the team, saying that there's members of the team who aren't doing what's quote unquote being drawn up on the board. You know, it is partly Fred. To me, it's more about the team. And you know, I wonder how those guys are feeling about this. You know, I really do, because you don't hear it from those other guys. They're not the kind of guys to say stuff like that. I don't know. It's just, you know,
not
probably not good anyway.
Though, I mean, you don't see generally. You might see somebody say a little thing about a coach, but this was really like, you know, this was really a big call out, especially 25 games into his tenure here. It was pretty aggressive. I think that it was a pretty aggressive move. It's not something that I think is that you see that often. So, you know, I mean, to me, it looks like Jimmy Butler here might be the culprit. And it looks like he may have gone overboard. And does this show maybe where his head's at? Maybe. I mean, I don't know. It might. I mean, we'll see how the team responds at the end of the day. That's what I think is the most important. But if your star is going in one direction and the team's going in another, that's not a good thing for the team.
I just think, you know, it wasn't that long ago. 2 weeks ago, I think the Bulls lost to the Celtics, and I'm reading Twitter, and it's just filled with this team sucks, they're terrible. Just this absolute joke of a timeline of comments that I've never seen are so negative. It's like the Bulls are held to a different standard than any other team in Chicago. The Cubs could suck for four straight seasons. They have one good year and everybody's, you know, on board. And, you know, there's nothing wrong and nothing ever was bad. You know, the White Sox, whatever. I don't even give a crap about the White Sox. The Bears are crappy for, you know, forever. And, you know, again, held to a different standard. It doesn't seem like the teams aren't as negative on them. You know, the Bulls were 15-8 at one point last year, and they were 15-8 at one point this year. They just lost two in a row, but they had three wins against plus 500 teams last year up to that point. After 23 games, 15-8, three wins versus plus 500 teams. This year, eight wins against plus 500 teams. And, you know, those wins were against the best, some of those were against the best in the league, the Spurs, the Oklahoma City, who am I missing, the Cavs, you know, the Clippers. Give me a break. You know, and people are just so quick to say, oh, the team's worse than they were last year. Not true. Not true. At one point, just this week, until they lost 10 in a row, the Bulls had the fifth best winning percentage in basketball. The Warriors, Spurs, Oklahoma City, and the Cavs had a better winning percentage. Yet they suck. They're terrible. I mean, come on, man. Get some big picture. I'm tired of freaking winning the December title. The team, all that matters is we get this stuff out of the way, and are we going to be good in April and May? And I really do feel there are signs of some almost unstoppable plays. We saw it in Game 1 against the Cavs last year. Rose and Gasol doing the pick and roll. There's times where it's almost magical how good they do that, especially when Gasol's hitting that free throw line jumper. I feel like he gets sometimes pushed out too far. Like, I don't like it when he's taking like a college three, but when he's in between the college three and the free throw line, and Rose goes hard off that pick and roll and kicks it back out to him, they're almost impossible to stop with that. Or Rose takes it directly to the hoop. You know, so I am seeing some good things, but you know, this kind of stuff is just, I don't know. It's such a downer to have a situation like this where you lose a four overtime game. Again, big picture, we should have won it, but we do lose a four overtime game. And the next game we go to, you know, playing the Knicks, and we get our ass handed to us. So, I don't know.
But what did you expect, though? I mean, you knew we were going to lose to the Knicks. After you go four overtimes, you play a back-to-back, you know you're going to lose. I didn't quite get it because we went out to that huge start at the beginning of that game. It was, I think the score was 12-2 at the way beginning. And then it was like we didn't score for two quarters. But, I mean, you can't expect that. I mean, I think that it would be a different thing right now if we had beaten the Pistons. I mean, I think that a lot of the frustration came from us losing to the Pistons. And, if you're not on a two-game losing streak, if you're on a one-game losing streak to the Knicks, I think that it's a different story. And maybe you would have beaten the Knicks had you have not had a four-overtime game the night before. You know, who knows? A lot of
good point.
But,
yeah, agreed.
You know, basketball is a game. I mean, just like you said, after we lost to Boston, it was like the world was coming to an end, but then we rattled off a four-game winning streak right after that where we beat the Clippers, we beat Memphis. So, I mean, what are you going to do, you know? I mean, we do need to play more consistently. This team is very inconsistent, especially against inferior competition. Derek needs to be consistent, something that he's not right now. He's relying just a ton on bank shots and on floaters, and it's like that's every single play that he does. And whatever, he's just not nailing them. I mean, It's a little bit mind-boggling because it looks to me like he's like he's taking good shots. I mean, they're all right around the rim. It's just like they're always just like an inch off. It's not like last year when he's fricking threes, and I'm like, you're not a three-point shooter, Derek. This is, God, like, it looks like that should have gone in. Why is it that every single one of them is missing the roll? Like, every single shot that he takes, it seems like it's just missing when it should. It looks good every single time. So is this something that's going to get remedied? Is it just the luck of the draw right now? It doesn't look like Derek right now is playing worse than he did last year, but he is. I mean, his numbers tell a story, and I mean, his field goal percentage is worse across the board. He looks to be worse, but it just doesn't seem that way when he's out on the floor. He seems to be passing the ball better. He seems to be getting good looks. He's just not nailing them, but that to me is such a huge thing. I mean, Derek's got to be more consistent. When Derek plays well and Jimmy plays well, we generally play well, but do I think that there's maybe a bit of a power struggle at top? You don't generally see Derek and Jimmy both playing well at the same time. You don't. What happened in that Pistons game? Derek was kind of dominating that game, and then eventually Derek missed a bunch of shots in the overtime, and Jimmy took over, and it just became a Jimmy show.
I thought Derek's best point was in the second overtime. He had several off the pick and roll with Gasol. You know, just fantastic short little hooks, short little running shots. He only really looked good to me. I mean, he had 34 points, but I think he took 34 shots. He only really looked fantastic in that period. I thought he looked incredible. And that's what's so frustrating when I watch him, is because there's periods where you do see the old kid back, and you do see him look just really incredibly good. And then there's other times where it's clear he's just kind of, you know, holding back a bit, kind of playing, you know, at probably an 80 or 90%, you know, not really giving it everything. And you know, maybe it's just in his demeanor or attitude, but I don't think so. If you look at the old tapes and see how hard that guy played and compare it to now, I guess it's normal, right? You go through two devastating knee injuries. I guess it's maybe the smart thing to do is not give it all until we get closer to playoff time. But, you know, I said the biggest issue this season beforehand is how these two guys, these two stars of the team, quote-unquote stars, mesh. And it's not really working really well. Sometimes it is, you know, but not nearly enough. And, you know, they got to get these issues ironed out, and I think they will. I really still am very high on the team, and I still think they can do some good things. But, you know, I saw today 50-50. The question was, should Bobby Portis start? And it was half the fans said yes. And I'm just like, you know, really? Is he... Do you think he should be starting to have, Gasol or Taj? Do you think that's the best thing for the progression of the rookie? I know he had a great game. He was wide open on a lot of those shots. That's not going to happen when you start and people start getting the buck on him.
You're absolutely right. Did he eat a whale, though, between the between Summer League and now? It looks like he ate another person. It was like...
What are you talking about?
When he came out. Dude, Bobby Portis, when I saw him in Summer League, was a lanky dude. When he came off that bench in that Knicks game, granted, we haven't seen a lot of him this year, but when he came off that bench in that Knicks game, man, he is huge. He is thick. Like, it looks like he has just been, like, hitting the weight room like nothing else, man. He does not look like the same guy. You normally do not see this with rookies that you draft. This happens in time, you know, because normally you're drafting young guys who start putting on, you know, man weight after their first year, second year. You start, like, look at Jimmy. When Jimmy came in, he was lanky as hell. Now he's a bulky dude. Bobby Portis went from looking like a lanky dude in the preseason to looking like an NBA big guy now in just a few months.
I like him a lot.
He's working on his game. And, dude, the fact that he has range, look, he can rebound the ball. It looks like you give him a little bit of time. Maybe he's a guy that can play defense. Maybe he should be playing ahead of Nico with how bad Nico's doing, how big of a liability he is. It's something you got to give
maybe some of his
minutes. Should he be starting? No, especially because Joakim Noah, we can look at this last game and say that we've been waiting 2 years for this, but we haven't had this whole season. Noah's been, per 48 minutes, much, much, much better. I mean, he's getting like 7 rebounds a game in like 20 minutes a night.
He's played great recently. Really quick, though, before I forget this, I did want to mention one thing I neglected to say earlier. You know, a big reason for the Bulls, I think, when they do struggle, Rose has got to get to the free throw line more. Do you know Butler, in 938 minutes, has been to the line 189 times? Gasol is second on the team in 729 minutes with 91 free throw attempts. Okay, so Butler literally has twice as many as the next guy on the team. The next guy is actually Rose tied with Mirotić at 59. They're almost almost 2-1 behind Gasol. So that has got to change. And we're talking, Rose has 756 minutes compared to Gasol's 729, and he shot about half as many free throws. I don't know what the issue is, but
yeah,
that's got to change.
Yeah, he's not getting the calls. I feel a lot of times he's not getting the calls.
I don't know about that. How is Mirotić getting the call, quote unquote, getting the calls at 582 minutes and 59 free throw attempts, and Rose is at got the same number with 756.
Well, when you're a big guy, you get hacked. When you're a big guy, you do get hacked.
You're right. But Rose handles the ball a lot more. He's got the ball in his hands a lot more.
It's
Mark,
not being aggressive though. Like last year, I got it. He wasn't going to the hoop. But
he's second on the team in attempts. He's second on the team in field goal attempts. 349.
How is he not getting to the line then? Is he just not? Is it that he's not barreling into people? Is it that he's stopping too soon for the floater? What is it? How is he not getting the line when he's going in on every single play?
I don't think he's going in on every single play. I think he's only been really changing that up recently when his shooting percentage was so bad, which is good now. He's taking it up to the hoop a lot more, but just got to keep on doing more of that and being more aggressive, going into people and trying to draw fouls and looking for contact, getting guys up and then looking, going up and getting fouls. You know, he's just not – that's got to change. It really does. That's so important, is drawing fouls on the team, putting them in foul trouble, and he's just not doing that anywhere near the rates that he was at his best. Back to Nico, though. You know, Nico's shooting now 38%, 38.3%, which is, you know, Heinrich-ish, and 33% from three. I mean, he's 1-for-6 against Detroit, 1-for-8 against the Knicks. Just playing horrible. I don't even know what to tell you. It's just, he's only shooting 70% from the free throw line, too, which isn't, you know, close to where he was last year, which I think was around 80. It's got to change, man. It's got to change. You know, it does, because he sucked. He sucked in the playoffs last year, and he sucked for the vast majority of this year. And I know he seems to be everybody's favorite to be the next superstar in Chicago, but I got news for you. He's not even close. In fact, he's regressing, and I think you're right. I'd rather see Portis get more of his minutes than the Mirotić right now, because he sucks defensively, too. He's Paul Gasol without the rim protection. That's what he is on the defensive end. He's terrible. And, you know, I'm all for giving Portis more of his minutes. You know, bringing him down. Mirotić has been averaging, seems like about 22 minutes a game. Let's see where he's at right now. He's at 23 minutes a game. Yeah, I'd say bring him down to 16 or so if he keeps on playing like this.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And then you give those minutes to Bobby Portis and see if he can keep doing that. If he can keep doing that in this role, then you consider giving him more minutes. Because, look, I mean, again, it's one game. So it's difficult to say, is he better than Todd?
We're shooting. Oh, you're talking about Portis? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, one game, exactly. Let's not call him, you know, all-star material after one game. But I do feel if everybody, what is said is true, and he's given, you know, give 100% of practice and doing all the things he needs to be doing, heck yeah. I mean, he can do better than 33% from three and 38% from the field, which is what Nico's giving you, with no defense, you know, absolutely. I think the most encouraging thing, though, is Noah looks like a different man all of a sudden. You know, hopefully that has something to do with being rested, but he is extremely aggressive, and he's been playing a ton better. So that's a great sign. I mean, he's got his shooting percentage up to 40%. He was in the 20s for quite a while there, which is still unacceptable for a big man, but at least it's on the way
up.
Well,
he's shooting the rock, though. I mean, he's shooting the last game was, like, the most aggressive I'd ever seen him. Like, I mean, he was all over the place, especially around the rim. He looks like Joakim Noah of old, so maybe he just needs a couple of these games to get his confidence back. I don't know if that's what confidence does to you, man. Like, if confidence can knock you so badly that you have that kind of a reaction to having a stretch where you weren't so good. I don't know, but Noah looks to be back. And at the moment, if Noah is back, then we're going to seriously have to consider our rotations, because, you know, if he's playing like this, he's your best center. He's your best defensive player on the team. It's not like the defense is the problem, though. But he keeps the offense moving, though, with his assists.
He definitely is playing better. You know, so, I mean, that's great to see. Hopefully now he's starting to embrace that role as a, coming off the bench and really being a spark plug there. You know, if he starts doing that and just decides to destroy off the bench, the Bulls are going to be a really good team. And he's only recently begun to do that. I still think in big picture, you know, this team would go pretty far. I really do feel that way. I think they could challenge Cleveland. You know, if we take a step back and look, last year we were only it was a miracle LeBron shot from going up 3-1 on the Cavs. You know, it wasn't like we were way out of things, you know. And then Gasol got hurt, and you know, so obviously it didn't turn out well. But I still think
this isn't going to happen though with shooting like this though. They got to start shooting better if that's going to happen. Rose has to become a better player. Rose has to shoot better. And Nico, too. I mean, you have two players that have a prominent role in this team that are shooting the ball terribly right now. And Noah was as well. But Noah looks to be coming around. But we need to start seeing some consistency in this offense because that's not what we're seeing. And for a team that is the seventh highest pace in the NBA, to be one of the 27th worst offenses with the seventh highest pace, it's not a good thing. Our offense is not good.
I would probably agree with you there. It's not good right now. It's getting better. You know, and I just pointed out what Doug had said. It takes a while when you install a whole new offense for that to really get moving. We got a lot of time left before April. I think by the end of the year they're going to be on, cooking on all cylinders, cooking with gas. I think we'll be fine. I really do. You know, I might be an optimist on this. I know a lot of people are probably shaking their head saying what a moron I am. These guys are too good. Jimmy Butler is too good. Derrick Rose is too good. Gasol is too good. Noah's too good. Taj is too good for them to keep on playing like this. Nico's too good. Nico's better than this. Come on.
I would think so. I would think so. But, I mean, they haven't shown it yet. And look, as far as Rose showing consistency, Rose has not been a consistently night in and night out good player for a while now. So it's like, I agree with, look, it seems like we should be better than this. It seems like we're too good. But when you're looking up against teams like the Cavaliers, where you've just got proven guys that night in and night out show up every single freaking day, it's difficult to really think that why is that going to happen to us when we don't see that coming from us? I mean, you should see a team that can get into a rhythm and play well, like the Warriors, that show up every single day. That's part of why they are able to play like this is because they show up every single day. I mean, it's going to have to happen at some point in the near future. I mean, if we're going like this in a month or 2 months, I'm not going to believe that it's fair to think that we can just go into the playoffs and be very good.
Good times as always, my man. Hopefully we get to do these more often.
Sounds good, brother. All right, I'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. All right, until next time, Zane Bulls.
Hey, basketball. Bye-bye.
All right, peace.